Good morning, dear Thai, dear Sangha, dear many Sangha everywhere. So good to see you. I apologize for going. But I am the only one here who can hear myself. And I hope that you also can hear me. So the Sangha that I can see on the screen, if you do not hear well, please make a sign or something so that I can know and I can address myself. So good morning again. Today we are the 13th, the 13th, the 11th, oh, the 11th of October 2014, and I am in Montreal at the Mindfulness Practice Center with friends, and this is a very special day. We are celebrating Thai's 88 continuation day, and I do not know if you have been invited or not, but Thai has invited us to not to send him gifts because his hut is too small, and he will not be able to receive all the gifts that we may want to send him. But he did have a very kind invitation request. Is that we, if we love him and we want to offer him something, that we think of a promise that we can send to him. A promise that we will keep for the rest of our life, something that we will be doing continually every time we think of him, every time we are in the practice. Pardon? Knowing how difficult it may be to for us to remember, he has also suggested that we do not find something that will be too difficult. As an example, he say, do not promise me that you will spend the rest of your life walking every step in mindfulness, because that will not be possible. So think of something very easy, something that you know that you will be able to do, and send it to him. He will be so happy to receive. On this continuation day also, I am very sad to announce that Thai is not very well. He has been very ill since the retreat in Italy, and has stopped teaching since. We heard news that he had stopped eating for many weeks, got very weak, but thanks to the help of a young non-physician, he did start eating again, and his health condition has been improving, and that was the last news that we have received from I don't recall the name of his hut. Um, So my hope, our hope is that he continues to improve and that he will get back to his normal healthy self so that we can continue to benefit from his presence, wisdom, his love and his compassion. The monastic has been very diligently practicing his teaching, meaning that they are practicing now even more diligently, knowing how Thai is not well, generating through their practice the love and compassion that can be of help to Thai, and really following Thai's teaching in going back, practicing the present moment, whatever is happening, trusting that whatever will only be for the better, practicing to really be worthy students of Thai and of the Buddha. Not only speaking, debating or discussing about impermanence and interbeing, but truly living it. And it is only when we are in critical situation, or especially when we are in difficult situation, to remember to go back to the practice, and this is an occasion for our monastic body to truly practice in order to be Thai's continuation and the Buddha's continuation. So today I'm very happy to be back in this home. It is so wonderful to be here. Today we have had the 14 mindfulness training recitation ceremony in French. And I do not know if you know, but I was born in France. And so French is kind of my native language. And it is so nice to be able to be with my French Francophone Sangha, chanting and reciting the mindfulness trainings in French. Thinking of Thai again and of Plum Village, which is also in France. I would like also to, this is not an announcement, this is to share with you that 2014 has been the 20th year of my LAM transmission. I have been ordained as a Dhamma teacher in 1994, that was 20 years ago, in Plum Village. Upper Hamlet? Or was it Lower Hamlet? I don't recall. But I asked the authorization from Thai to give my Dhamma talk in French. And I believe that that was also the first Dhamma talk in Plum Village that was delivered in French, because the teaching used to be in Vietnamese or in English. The subject of the talk was happiness is possible in the present moment. It has been my practice. It was the key point. It was the hook that draw me into this practice. Happiness. And le hasard, English for hasard. Le hasard. It's a coincidence, I don't know. But this morning in the recitation ceremony, I was given the seventh mindfulness training to read. May I have the English version so I can read it to our friend? And I'm using the word coincidence, but I know that it is not a coincidence. It was you all know about this training, but please allow me to read it again to us all. I would like to read it to you because I want to share with you what has been the core and the essence of my practice. All the time I have been in this tradition. The seventh mindfulness training: dwelling happily in the present moment. Aware that life is available only in the present moment, we are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of our daily life. We will try not to lose ourselves in dispersion or to be carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, or craving anger or jealousy in the present. We will practice mindful breathing to be aware of what is happening in the here and the now. We are determined to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing and healing elements that are inside and around us in all situations. In this way, we will be able to cultivate seeds of joy, peace, love and understanding in ourselves, thus facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. We are aware that real happiness depends primarily on our mental attitude and not on external condition, and that we can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that we already have more than enough conditions to be happy. So why am I telling you all of this? I'm smiling because I know that, well, I know, I suspect that some of you out there may be asking yourself, what is Chen Hui talking about again? What does this have to do with today's subject? And let me reassure you, it is all within the subject of today's talk. Today's talk is about consciousness at the base. And at the base of consciousness, happiness is there, and happiness is possible. So is suffering. We have been caught, I have been caught all my life with my suffering. And thanks to this practice, thanks to my teacher's teaching, thanks to the Buddha and the ancestral teachers, I've been taught that there's more to it. There's also happiness. And where is happiness? It is right in our consciousness, with us all the time. And that is the key message of today's talk. Consciousness at the base, consciousness containing all that is. Consciousness storing, maintaining, preserving all the seeds of compassion, love, understanding, mindfulness, happiness, and you name them. Everything that you can think of, everything that you can imagine, everything that is contained in you, in your star consciousness, in your consciousness at the base, in your alaya consciousness, everything. Everything that has manifested and that you have been able to identify. Everything that is still dormant, waiting only for conditions to also manifest themselves. Everything, all seeds are contained in the star consciousness. And that is today's talk, the subject of today's talk. This summer, or this spring, I was back home in my house in Ottawa, and I have engaged myself in doing something that I have not been very diligent at doing. I'm not a very good gardener. In fact, I'm not a gardener at all. So I have established, I have j'ai fait un jardin, a rock garden. Like, you know, the Zen thing where you have only gravels, and because I did not want to have to water out of laziness. I pretend that it is for ecological, for green reasons, so that I will be saving water and not using pesticide and blah, blah, blah. But it was, well, I can confess to you that it's more out of laziness. And that is what I found out, that you cannot be lazy even with a rock garden. Because when I went back home this summer, there were more of everything covering the gravel. In my previous life, I was an engineer and a project manager. So I am very good at doing plans and design and all of that specification. So my garden has been completely, all the soil and was taken off. I had I don't recall how much, but a layer of sand, and I even pick up the sand that was sanitized or that was heated, so that there's nothing living in it. I had a very thick membrane on top of that, and then some crushed stone and the gravel and then the stone on top, thinking that I would be good for life and that I would not have to do anything. It took me many hours and many days during this summer to maintain or to put it back to shape. But it was so nice because we were studying together transformation at the base, and the description of our alaya, of the ground of our being as a field, is so accurate and so wonderful. We contain everything. And every plant, every that I was pulling out was a prayer and a teaching. They are all different. And I could recognize the flowers in the front garden, all the way in the backyard. And plants that I don't know where they come from. They must come from the birds. And the birds that must have been carried all the way from south and migrating back. And they were, I don't know. But they were everywhere, everything was just and when I mentioned to you that pulling each thing out was a prayer and was what was the word I used? A teaching. Some are very high, but so easy to pick out because they just a few small roots. But some just small like this, and you try to pull it, and it won't come. And you have to go very deep, and all of a sudden you find a maze of it. And I had to cut the membrane off, and I was so amazed. So this is not new for you, all you friends in Texas, you have been farming, so you know this. My friend in Idaho, I'm thinking of Bill. You know the land. You know how it is. You know what it is to be able to well, I need to by the way, I'm going to Idaho next week and to Montana, so I will have the chance to be learning more from our brothers and sisters there. But there's so much teaching that I have received from working in my backyard. All the 50 verses describing the function of the mind, starting with the first one. The first one describing store consciousness, our alaya, the ground of our being, containing all the seeds. Is a wonderful image, and it is at the base of all of our practice. If we just need to remember that we contain everything, that we contain seeds of Buddha, that we contain seeds of all the great beings, that we contain love and compassion. To remember that we too can do it. And this is again a repetition of what it is that we have been learning last year in the Lotus Sutra, or the year before in the Diamond Sutra. And it is all about the function of the mind. The mind is the master painter, and the world we live in is only a painting. And the master painter is our mind. We will have the chance to investigate and to learn more about the function of the mind in the remaining 8 months, 8 talks, in remaining months. I will be everywhere, and I hope that I will be able to connect back to you, with you, every month, so that we can continue this wonderful investigation. But for today, the only thing that we need to remember is that we contain everything, we contain all, and that we can be every and anything. That we already are what we may have wanted to be. Because we have it all. Because we have it all inside of us. We have the capacity, we have the ability. Practicing what we have called selective watering. To transform, to change the conditions we are currently in order to receive or to get what it is that we know or that we trust that we cannot have. This morning we did not have much time to do the Dharma discussion we usually do after a recitation ceremony. But I was very touched by a sharing that I will ask to share with this community also. A friend in this Sangha mentioned that he was very disappointed last week because he fell into a big anger. He has been very diligently practicing in our tradition for many years, and he's one of our key organizers here. So he knows it all. He knows that anger is an energy. That anger is manifesting in mind consciousness, but that it comes from seeds that are buried very deep inside his alaya, he also knows that the seed that of anger that he has been transmitted to him from his parents, because his parents were also very angry. And it is very easy to guess that the grandparents must have been also angry, and that the seed that Zil is carrying now inside of him are seeds that have been transmitted to him from generations. And so he was a very angry child in a very angry family. And when you are an angry child in an angry family, they do not let you be very angry too long, because they beat you up or they oppress you. They do not allow you to be angry. Anger cannot be suppressed. Anger cannot be oppressed. So as the little child, he had to suppress and oppress his anger, and that only makes his anger stronger. So now, at almost 60 years old, that seed that has been there, that has been nourished, that has been oppressed, that has been is that maze that I have been mentioning to you about. It has very deep roots, and it is very difficult to transform. Talking about anger, another image comes to me, and the name of the image is habit energy. Because we have been rehearsing, because we have been learning, because we have been acting in the same way for so long, it has become a habit. It has become an automatism. What's the word in English? Automatism.
Automatism.
Okay, automatic reaction. And we just do not know how or why it happened, but it just happened. So what to do and how to do it? The answer is practice. Keep practicing. The result will not be in this lifetime. Sorry. But when I say practice, I do not know how you understand practice. What is your practice? And it is one of those words that we overuse in our practice, you see, again. So we always talk about practice. And sometimes I want to play my Zen master and I say, oh, you are practicing, good. But what is your practice and what are you practicing? And when you say that you are not practicing, you are practicing. And when you say that you are practicing, my question is, what are you practicing? Because we are continuously practicing. We are continuously learning. we are continuously rehearsing. And it is only with our mindfulness that we can discern what it is that we want to practice and what it is that we should be practicing and what it is that we should not be practicing. And that is what is called right diligence. What are we doing that is feeding our love and compassion, our understanding? And what is it that we are doing that is not, or that is only nourishing, feeding our craving, our desire, our anger, our jealousy, just to name them? So what is the practice, or what is a practice? Practice is the practice of mindfulness. And what is the practice of mindfulness? The practice of mindfulness is to stop. To stop. To stop in order to be able to see. And I'm talking about right view. We're always seeing. But what is it that we are seeing? We are only seeing our perception. And all of perceptions are wrong perceptions. How can we get to right view? By stopping. By sitting and by breathing. It is not by listening to an eloquent Dhamma teacher or to a wonderful Dhamma talk. That's only entertainment. The practice is to stop and to breathe, and that is all that we need to do. And why and how? When we are stopped, when we are breathing, we are calming. And when I am speaking about stopping and calming, I can only mention to you that in my 20 years of practice, I've been talking about breathing. I've been talking about stopping, about calming, about healing, about transformation. And I have to confess to you now today that I've been talking too much and not doing enough. Our teacher is so generous, and out of his compassion, he has been teaching relentlessly without stopping. He was teaching still in Italy when he was very sick. He pushed himself up in order to be able to be there to teach. That is how, out of his great compassion, our Dhamma teachers are also motivated by that bodhicitta inside of them. And they also want to give you all everything that they know or that they have. And I look at what it is that we have been sharing to you for this month e-talk, for last month e-talk, and I find that it is way, way, way too much. Too much reading, too much material, too many concepts, too many numbers, too many of everything. And let me tell you something. If I did not stop them, I mean our three Dhamma teachers who have been doing the program, you would have had 10 times more than what has been sent out. And even with that very censored version, reading them again this week, I find that it is way too much. And so my no, I won't say anything. Enjoy them, read them. It will be very nice because everything that you read will be new seeds planting in your alaya, and that's wonderful. But what would be even more important, what would be more beneficial, is that you remember to answer to Thay's invitation and send him one promise that you can do every day until your last day. Try to stay with your breathing. Try to sit, try to walk, try to be there. The more time you can afford to, and the more time you can remember to. A very dear friend of mine, who is now a lone monk in Texas, we were ordained as Dhamma teachers in the same class. He was very sick and, he was a lay Dhamma teacher, became a monastic, fully ordained, and have asked Thay's authorization to practice on his own because of his health. And I consider him my teacher. Because he has been able to use his practice to overcome or to prolong his life. When he left the community, his doctors gave him a maximum of 5 years to live. Now, 20 years after, he's still alive and teaching. And he credit his health to the practice that he have been studying with the Theravadan monk in Thailand and in Burma. And in the Southern tradition, they are practicing very diligently the four establishment of mindfulness, the Satipatthana Sutta. And I am so happy and so pleased that is something I will come back to. He shared about his practice that he has learned in Burma. So the four establishment of mindfulness, the first one is about the body. And in the first establishment of mindfulness, it starts with the breath. And he was instructed how to breathe, and he was given Okay, now I lost my concentration. So they had to sit for 7 or 10 hours a day, just watching their breath. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. And I apologize for repeating the same boring thing. But monks in Burma has to spend years just to practice breathing. And as brilliant a practitioner my friend was, he had to practice 18 months just breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in and keeping all your attention all along the in-breath. And he said it is very difficult to keep your attention with your full in-breath. And so he has to cut his in-breath into 20 parts, aware while he's breathing in, to be sure that there's not a small opening for everything else to be happening, but his full awareness of his in-breath, following it from the beginning until the end of the in-breath, staying, dwelling with that place where the in-breath become an out-breath. And he spent 18 months with that practice, breathing in and breathing out. For the fifth of the 16 breath to become real and to manifest. And that is the insight and the result that he got from the practice of breathing. We have learned the four establishment of mindfulness 4 or 5 times already. Every 4 years we come back to it. And if I recall correctly, the last time was the 5th time that we were doing it. And when we were studying the 4 establishment of mindfulness, we were also studying the 16 mindful breath. And we just go, breathe in, I know, breathe out, I know, I smile, I come, blah, blah, blah. Please do not underestimate the simplest practice, because they are the way out. And unless we learn how to breathe and to walk, why do we want to venture? Why do we want to access to anything if we do not know even how to breathe? If we do not know how to keep our attention with our in-breath and out-breath, so that the true fruit of the practice can become real. And the true fruit of the practice, the first fruit of the practice, is the joy of stopping, the joy of being there. You may say, oh, I already know that. Oh, I'm okay, joy, easy. Okay. But if a monk, a brilliant monk, a Dharma teacher, has to spend 18 months in a hut in Burma, practicing in and out, finally realizing what joy is, what the 5th of the 16 mindful breath is. Then, so it is my invitation to us to also be able to discover the true fruit that this practice can bring about. I have been wondering again and again. So I just would like to summarize and to repeat. Today's talk is about consciousness at the base. Please remember that our consciousness, our stored consciousness, the ground of our being, contain all the seeds. And the quality of our life depend on those seeds, depending on their predominance, depending on their strength, depending on their composition. will make a happy life or will make a life of suffering. And as a gardener, as a laborer, we have been given the tools in order to be able to do that gardening work. And the gardening work start with mindfulness in order to be able to identify the seeds that are wholesome and the seeds that are unwholesome, and to be able to stop in order to see what it is that we need to do and what it is that we should refrain from doing to allow for only the best seeds to grow and to manifest, and not to allow the unwholesome one to be. In order to do that, we are also given the practice of from the four establishment of mindfulness, starting with mindfulness of the body, in the body, starting with the practice of the in-breath and out-breath, stopping, smiling. And all of this is again in accord with the Four Noble Truths. Suffering is, because there are causes to suffering. And with the study of the function of the mind, we can know where the root cause of the suffering is. And we are also taught how it is that we can do in order to live our life so that we can get the way out of suffering. And the way out of suffering is about the Eight Noble Truths. It's about the Eightfold Path. And it starts with right view. And right view is the view of interbeing. It's the view of impermanence. And so I'm very happy. I'm looking forward to a very wonderful year of study and practice, because we will be studying all of them together. The 50 verses with the four establishment of mindfulness and the heart of the Buddhist teaching. So we'll be doing all those study together and manifesting or realizing, or I don't know which word to use, but really illustrating the interbeing nature of all the Buddha's teaching. They're all interrelated. They're all supporting one another, and we'll see how, and it is wonderful. So thank you very much for being there. Thank you for your attention, and it has been a pleasure being with you. Next talk, I don't know, will be in November. I don't know if it will be from the West Coast or from Vietnam, but I will be there. Thank you.